It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Saturday, and a lot to talk about here on the fishing front and getting ready for hunting season coming up.
There's a lot happening right now,
Sean.
That's
right, this time of year and into August, which is still, you know, plenty of fishing ahead, plenty of warm weather. Fishing never stops around here, but also people thinking about getting in the woods. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. We'll talk about the water right now because Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us. Good morning.
Morning, guys. I'm sneaking away from the saltwater area. I've been spending some time up here at Lake Martin and visiting Wind Creek State Park to get some fuel this morning and helping support DCNR at the north end of the state. And I love the saltwater area, but I have to admit it's pretty nice up here too.
You were saying to us before we went on, when you come out of the water, you don't have to spray off with fresh water. You don't have that kind of salt, sticky salt feeling.
It is a different feeling when you come out, and I'm a big pond kind of guy. I've spent 30 years working on the big pond, but it is nice to come and relax and sit on the deck over the freshwater too.
So now y'all know, with somebody who is head of marine resources, when they do get away from work, they go to the freshwater. I like it. Yeah. I'm still sticking around water, just changing it. A lot to talk about here as we get into August, but I guess I want to do a retrospective as well. We talked there at the close of snapper season about how we came to that early close. People who didn't catch that show, can you give us like the Cliff Notes version of what happened?
Absolutely. You know, we monitor the landings through Snapper Check and our participation through that and our dockside surveys, our staff that you see at the ramps, and we develop a reporting rate. We use the real numbers from the reports, both the paper and the electronic, which this is the last year for the paper. It's going away. So next season, there will be no paper reporting through Snapper Check. And pretty quickly, we saw the effort was tremendous. We opened May 22nd, which this year Memorial Day was a little bit early. And, you know, the fish is usually really good right there at the very beginning of the season. We usually see a little bit of a tapering off in July. The fish get a little finicky. But we saw a tremendous increase in effort. And at the end of the day, we attribute it to COVID, which is kind of an interesting aspect. But we talked before, you couldn't go on a cruise ship, you couldn't go to Mexico, you couldn't go to Disney, you weren't playing travel sports, but you went boating. And I talked to a marina in Gulf Shores, in Orange Beach. They had three record-setting weekends of fuel sales. So,
and the boat sales were through the roof. The boat sale numbers I had heard, this is anecdotally, but they were through the roof.
I talked to Jeff Duke the other day at Bass Pro. He said they sold 200 and something boats. I got one of my best buddies. Every boat he gets, he sells. I mean, the boat sales have been through the roof. It's unbelievable this year.
They have, and people went. The timing for going snapper fishing was perfect. It takes just a little bit of electronics and a little bit of tackle, and those fish are very accessible to folks. And so pretty early on in the season, we did see that. Our season average for vessel trips, the number of boats that go fishing per day, ended up at around 713, and last year the average was about 530. So that's a lot of people when you look at 4 to 6 people on average per vessel, and that's daily. That includes when you average it out Mondays. And Mondays was kind of a unique thing. Some people told me, oh, well, Mondays hurt us. They didn't hurt us. If you add up all the Mondays together, they equal like our peak Saturday.
And so one day. So one Saturday. They equal one Saturday.
Just a little bit over one Saturday. But it provided that access to the people who don't have opportunities on the weekends or people who are local who said, I'll avoid Saturdays and let them have the ramps and the waterways and I'll go on Mondays. So the feedback we got about Mondays for the people that were using it fell right in line with what we anticipated, and that we will and I think we will continue with a Monday to provide that extra access. And if you're on vacation, it gives you an extra opportunity to have a day. I think we averaged about 13 or 14,000 pounds on a Monday. And so on Saturdays, we were up as, you know, 100,000 pounds on peak weekends. And it was absolutely amazing.
I've never seen so many people on the water in my life, be honest with you.
Well, and you know, this story, I think, is I mean, you talk on the wildlife side. We've talked to Director Sykes, too. The turkey numbers coming in and all that, the people that were in these same situations couldn't do whatever they normally did with their time.
Work
or, you know, go on these other vacation ideas or whatever. Spend more time at home, spend more time turkey hunting. Now we're seeing the same thing on the fishing side. Even more people will go fishing than that. So that brought the early closure. So with that being said, I mean, the allocation next year, let's just assume the allocation is going to be the same in tonnage from the feds. Y'all, will you look at the stats from this year and amend the season going into it? Or if we're not in a COVID situation, you'll go back to a normal, you know, normal schedule?
So we looked at it this year, and we actually, I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. If you've looked at our website at outdooralabama.com, we have a graphic up there that we do have some fish left over. The final days were not as fished as heavily, and again, the fish get a little bit smaller into July and a little harder to catch. So we probably have about a full day of fishing left. We just have to figure out what day that will be. And the commissioner is pretty big on trying to make sure that we utilize our quota efficiently and effectively for our folks. We don't want to go over, but we do want people to fish the quota that we have. So we are looking at probably one more day sometime during the season, you know, a bonus day. So we will look at that. And as we move into 2021, we have to look at, I think, where are we with the COVID situation and what is going on as far as other outdoor activities. And so we've never tried to model pandemic into our season dates. And so this last year, I think it really played heavily into it. In 2021, Memorial Day weekend is, you know, closer to the traditional June 1st because it's not that extra weekend in there. So that kind of plays into it a little bit. So we will look long and hard because now we have 3 years of state-managed data. We have Monday data to add in there. So it changes. It's ever-evolving. And I think most people recognize. I had people come up to me after the second weekend and said, Scott, there's no way with the number of boats I'm seeing that we'll make it through this season. And, you know, trying to be optimistic. I said, we might. But
I knew that, again, too. I knew that was going to work.
The boat sales and the everything else, it's likely to be another banner year next year. And, again, the weather is the one that's always an outlier. You know, we had that Cristobal weekend where there was nothing. And you can look on outdooralabama.com, and we graph the weather and the effort. And that was a bust of a weekend. And the other weekend, it was actually very, very nice.
Yeah.
So, you know,
one thing I'd like to see, if y'all could manage it somehow, is to, no matter what happens, have a weekend for the rodeo where you have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, no matter what. If you have to cut it off the second week of June or whatever it is, but then have enough fish to catch on the rodeo. Is there a way to do that somehow?
Well, there is possibly. We, you know, we considered the rodeo even when we looked at last year. And some people say, well, is that fair to focus on one fishing rodeo? And I said, well, it's the largest in the country.
Yes.
And that particular rodeo has so many participants, they're going to kill fish anyway when they're out there targeting other species, other reef fish species.
Right.
So we'd rather account for them and have them harvested instead of being dead fish, so to speak. So it is in the back of our minds, but it's not really in the back of our minds. It's in the front of our conversation that there is the possibility to do something like that. Now, I will tell you, we ran the numbers this year. When the weather is good for the rodeo, they fish between 25 and 50% greater effort than a normal weekend. So, again, it's a difficult weekend to manage as far as the effort.
Right.
This year, the weather was good. I think it would have been, you know, through the roof with red snapper.
Well, Sunday, there was a lot of people didn't go out Sunday because the weather was bad Sunday.
Because the weather did get through that. And so we also talked about that potentially – even if they have 2 days for like a snapper jackpot or something, now that's always a possibility. This year, when we were looking at closing, there was just not enough fish to even consider having a closure and reopening for that weekend, because the amount of effort that weekend is generally tremendous.
Right.
So, but it is a consideration, because we consider, you know, dead fish as part of the equation.
Sure. You know, some people throw back a lot of fish, and some people, I mean, like when we went fishing, we didn't throw back a fish.
One.
You know, yeah. So it also
depends on, you know, where you're fishing and the size of the fish on that reef.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you're having to cull through, like a lot of people on public stuff by the end of the season, close, having to cull through a lot of, you know, 12, 14 inch fish to get a keeper.
Right. But one thing about the state reefs and stuff, most of them are in close. Most of those people are in close. They're within 20 miles and not real deep, mm-hmm. and the fish do have a better survival rate.
Sure.
If they're handled, try not to handle them too much. Just get them released. And again, there is the predatory concern. Those fish, when they hit the water, the underwater
Flipper.
Predators like sharks and things they like to pounce on them. So it's kind of a give and take.
The dolphins followed us around.
Yeah,
they would follow us from reef to reef. It was crazy. Hey, can you hold on 1 second? We're going to run to the break. And come right back. More with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Talk about amberjack and amberjack fishing. Also, if you look at the pictures on Outdoor Alabama or on their Facebook page, look at the speckled trout stocking going on around here. I want to talk about that as well when we return. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And by the way, too, as you check out our Facebook page, check out the Facebook page for FM Talk 106.5, although I'll link it up on the Outdoors one as well. We're in week 7 right now of our fishing photo contest brought to you by Sportsman's Marine. And the winner of this last week, and our weeks go Thursday to Thursday because it's a contest I just kind of started off the top of my head on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And so your week is Thursday to Thursday to post up your favorite fishing picture and then get folks to like that picture and win one of those FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Team Dry Fit shirts. This last week, it was Tracy Cook. And there's a brim. Y'all can go check out the picture of the winner.
5 gallon bucket lid.
Yes, it's got a 5 gallon bucket turned upside down, and it's got this bull brim laid on it. And Mike, if I'm lying, I'm dying. Tail hanging off one end, nose hanging off the other.
It is. I see it. I'm looking at it. It's in the middle of the bucket.
It is. Y'all,
it's a whopper.
I mean, it's something. I know we're talking about saltwater fish, although our buddy Scott Bannon is up at Lake Martin. Yeah, maybe there's some brim like that up there. Scott, this thing is, I don't know how many pounds it was, but it's hanging off both sides of a 5 gallon bucket.
I saw the picture, and, you know, that is a phenomenal fish. Like, that's one that you almost run away from. Say, that can't be real. But I have not seen anything that particular size, and I'm barely a saltwater fisherman. I'm a terrible freshwater fisherman, so I've enjoyed, you know, losing bait, and you know, my arm was a little sore from casting, but I have not seen one of those, but I am certainly proud for them to have caught something like that. Once in a lifetime deal.
That is, it's an amazing bull brim, and it's my transition here into, I'd say, one of the saltwater fish that has the same kind of attitude, ounce for ounce and pound for pound, as amberjack. You know, I mean, if you had to, if a bull brim got to 40 pounds, we'd be in trouble. If he got to 100 pounds, I don't know if we'd ever stop him. But amberjack are one of those fish you never stop. But we're back to fishing for amberjack. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so it opens, you know, it's today. The first amberjack season opens. That is the beginning of the amberjack season, the way that's run, because it's managed across the Gulf of Mexico. So that is the first day of the amberjack calendar year is August 1st. So it's a new season.
Happy New Year, amberjack.
Yeah.
and it'll run till it'll close the morning of November 1st or October 31st. And so good late year season fish to go after. You know, we have some of our super reefs out there with amberjack poles and some that we've had lots of great feedback on with the
are they marked differently? I mean, if we're looking at charts or going to the website or the calendar, is it show us the ones that have those amberjack poles?
It'll say super pyramids.
Okay.
Those generally have, those are the bigger ones. You know, that's a good question. I should probably be able to answer for you if we say that they have the amberjack poles or not. And I will check into that. And maybe there's a way we can do that on our spreadsheet that's available at OutdoorAlabama.com. You can download all of them. There's some methods on there to download them to your digital charts. And,
yeah, those KML files.
Correct.
Yeah, those.
Yeah, you're spelling at me, and I'm not good with that. I know it's available.
Yeah, I've used those before, downloaded them. So there are some that have even better structure for amberjack.
Absolutely. And, again, a lot of positive feedback on those. And they are probably one of the most fun fish to catch that are fairly accessible to most anglers without going and getting into the tunas and the other things that are way offshore.
It depends on your age as far as
It's fun to catch one. I catch one and then I'm done.
Yeah.
You know? What about that? I started thinking about that while you were talking, Scott, and management of amberjack. Because we talk about management of red snapper and getting, you know, 3 years now of having some state control here on setting seasons. But amberjack are one of those critters, while they're, you know, present all over the Gulf and Florida and Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, there's different structures in different places, too. I mean, they're different habitats, right? I mean, I've got to think that down the west coast of Florida is a different thing for an amberjack than it is up here on the northern Gulf Coast.
So we look at amberjack and another very valuable species for us, triggerfish, that from an Alabama perspective, I think I would like to see that fall under state management because we have the artificial reef zone off the state of Alabama. We gather data on that in our research that is being conducted every year through the Sea Lab, through the University of South Alabama, Dr. Sean Powers and Dr. Ship. They do some great research for us. We have great data. The one data piece that we would like to see in that is the landings, such as snapper checks. So this year, we're beginning January 1, the amberjack triggerfish will become mandatory species in the Snapper Check program. We're not going to change the name of Snapper Check. It's been around. It's established. But we're going to add, it's been optional in there, and some people have used it, and we appreciate that. And the reason we want to make it mandatory is, again, not to try and take something away from somebody, but that we can show what those numbers look like in Alabama versus what we get from the feds sometimes, which mm-hmm. we are oftentimes in disagreement with. So I think most of our reef fish anglers who are doing snapper check and have realized the benefit of that, that, you know what, amberjack and trigger would be two great species to look at from a state perspective. And it takes a while to make those changes, but we have to have data in place to argue our side of the battle here. And I think that people will be open to that. But it'll be January 1st is when that becomes mandatory. So the next trigger and amberjack seasons after the first of the year, and we'll do some other advertising and put that information out there. But we've actually had people say, hey, can we add these two species, because I think this would be important to know, and we agree.
Okay, so but at first, like starting January 1st, we're doing this still, it's still under federal control, we're just building the data for you to make the argument with.
That's correct.
Okay. So there's some lag time in that to absolutely. Get that information, you know, until you go to the feds and say, hey, guys, yeah, look at here.
Yes. So we have some survey data and some estimates, but we would like to go ahead and use that reporting, the program, to start getting much better data. And again, we're moving at the speed of government. So I'm retirement eligible in 2 years. So I'm going to fight the fight at least until that point. But we're going to continue to try and figure out what ways we can make changes to make better opportunities for anglers in Alabama.
And it would be awesome if you could go catch a snapper, an amberjack, and a triggerfish the same day.
That is my dream, is that we can have the trifecta. When you leave from Alabama, that you can go have an opportunity to do that. There's some argument about from different folks about moving, you know, you have these different species available during different times of the year for just so you have an opportunity at different times that something is open. Most people are like me, and they watch their gas money, and they would like to have that that opportunity to do a multi-species trip. And there are other fish out there, and we always encourage people to target other species. And again, takes a little more education sometimes into the different methods and tackle and things like that. But I just try to remind folks, it is about fishing, it's not about catching, but we sure like to catch something and bring it back.
Yeah, that's for sure. And let's switch before we run out of time to inshore and watching y'all's Facebook page and seeing some little baby speckled trout. What's going on with that?
I tell you, the spotted sea trout program or speckled trout is pretty exciting. We had local fishermen in tournament and guides provide the stock for us, which was a great public-private partnership, you know, to be able to get the fish into our tank. And they seem to spawn pretty easily, so that's good. We actually had to make some adjustments to stop the spawn because we can only handle so many fish at one time. We had our first release of a 2-inch trout, and so whether or not we're going to let them get that big all the time, it's kind of up for debate right now. We were learning the process and making sure our system was able to manage the fish. And Max Westendorf, our hatchery manager, has done a great job with that. And so we released those 2-inch trout. I believe there were around 60,000 or so of those. I'd have to go get the numbers. But we can do that multiple times a year, possibly, and in different locations. So very successful program.
Why don't you, just a suggestion from a concerned local angler, why don't y'all, not 2 inches, why don't y'all raise them up to about 6 or 7 pounds and then turn them out?
We've had that discussion, and the cost per weight gets to be tremendous. So we're trying to use, and that's what it comes down to.
I'm goofing, I'm messing with you.
No, I have discussed, hey, can we raise them to a little bit bigger size or some other things, but it really becomes about the dollars and the return on your investment, because the bigger fish are more likely to survive. But that's kind of the return, is that size fish, that 1 to 2 inch fish seems to be the best bang for the buck, and trying to get them, they feed on their own at that point, and so
that's what I was wondering too. Is that great. Yeah? Is there a, you know, obviously not 6 or 7 pounds, like I'm joking, but is there a between 0.5 inches and 5 inches, is there a sweet spot for survivability to not just immediately all get eaten out there?
And yes, and that's about where it is, based on what it would cost us to continue to grow them out and what they're ready to start doing. And most of those type fish, they cannibalize each other. I think there's a picture on our Facebook page where one is eating another one. And so the return gets to be a little difficult when you have them in that environment, and they go after each other. I mean, you guys see how they attack, bait and different things, and they will attack each other.
Fish do that. It don't matter what
they don't know any better.
Yeah, bass, they eat bass. Brim eat brim. You know, it doesn't matter. Speckled trout eat speckled trout.
Flounder do
redfish,
it.
Redfish, whatever.
They all do it. They're all going to be somewhat cannibalistic, and so again, what's your return on your investment? And that seems to be the sweet spot to put them out there. And so we've had a lot of good feedback about the changes in the regulation last year. And again, probably perfect timing that we didn't plan on with the boat sales increase and the effort on the water. I have had a few folks talk about in the last year the increase they have seen due to the boat sales, the increased effort out there and the pressure on those fish. So I think everything came together at a pretty good time to make the regulation changes to, CCA of Alabama helped us get all the equipment in place and do things to get that trout program moving, along with the flounder. So those two are very high on our list. And we still do the pompano. We have them. We've done some releases this year for the pompano out on the beach.
So. And a flounder.
Yeah, you said the flounder.
We're going to do another flounder run. We kind of let them, they're a little more finicky about the spawning season, so we kind of let them go on their own, and they like to do a certain time of year. And whereas the trout, like I said, we actually had to make some changes to turn them off. So it's a very exciting process to see these fish spawn. They grow. I tell them it's like my babies. I like to go over and open the tanks and look in there, and I think the staff gets tired of me doing that.
Yeah, but it's fun. Scott, as always, we appreciate your time. Get back to that fresh water. Enjoy that vacation, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, guys. I'll be looking forward to getting back.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, Scott Bannon, our guest, and we're coming right back. right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along on this Saturday. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's kind of transitional time. We're still talking about fishing, saltwater fishing, freshwater fishing. But now, a lot of us look into the woods.
And we got to reminisce a little bit back earlier in the season, too.
That's right.
Yes.
I didn't even get a chance to explain why I'm not going to have a dove shoot this year. I'll post some of those pictures up. I've got a dove field, a millet field that has could not get above a putting green height.
Because of deer?
Because of deer.
Yeah.
So that's a whole other show. So when I don't have a dove shoot this year, thank the gaggle of about 15 does that are keeping that mode down. All right. Let's talk about the hunting. Let's talk about the woods. Let's talk about some turkeys as well. When we do, we always check in with our buddy. He is Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll have to send you pictures of the lawnmowers. I mean, millet. They're not even leaving the millet grow, Chuck.
Have you tried any millet organite?
No, because just the idea of having somebody else's poop in a bag is bothering me. I don't know.
I understand, but do you want to have a dove shoot or
yeah,
not? You know, everybody's got their own threshold.
I'm at it. I have had it with them, and I torture myself. I have two cell cameras looking at that millet field at all afternoon, night, and morning. It's ding, 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 ding. Pictures of them in there mowing it down.
I can see pictures now. John gets all his buddies out there to help out on the dove field.
We're all going to have to sit out there all night. That melagronite stuff you're talking about, Chuck, tell folks that don't know what that is.
Melagronite is basically human excrement from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that is processed and put in a bag. It is a organic fertilizer. A lot of golf courses and things like that use it. But it also has some repellent in it. And I've used it quite a bit to keep deer off of a place for a couple of weeks, off of young soybeans or things like that, just to help it get over that hump. And if you're scared of melagronite, I used to do this on a peach orchard that I had. I had a propane cannon, and you just have a propane bottle like you hook up to your grill or your fish cooker, and it's got a little cannon on it. You can set it to go off at certain hours, you know, off and on all day long, and it'll emit a loud blast ever so often, and that helped me keep birds out of peach trees.
Yeah, and that's the one I was looking at, thinking about, dude. I remember my family had done it, my mom's side, the farmers, when they were seeding. You know what I'm saying? Because I guess the crows and the other birds would come when they're doing corn seeding or whatever, they would come and pick out the seed. And so they would fire off those cannons in. But I got to do something. Heck, my beans are growing, and they won't let my millet grow. It's a whole other story. But we got a lot to talk about here. And I, Lord knows, talked to you for a long time about saving millet and saving soybeans. But I want to go back in time and talk about turkeys. Because, you know, earlier in the show, we're talking to Director Bannon about the effort for Snapper, why we closed early and why we reached our tonnage early in Alabama with the increased effort. What about turkey harvest? I've been hearing these stories from all across the country that during quarantine, just a lot more people were in the turkey woods. What are we seeing in Alabama? What are the stats showing?
It was the same thing. I mean, our turkey harvest was definitely up. I think it was up like 47%.
That's big. Wow.
And you know, you don't know whether that was that many new people out there, that many people that had refused to game check in the past that just started to game check. So we've still got to tease some information out of that. But our license sales showed that there weren't that many new people that were just buying a license during turkey season. I do think there were more people out there hunting. I think there were people that were deer hunters that had never turkey hunted. They had time on their hands, so they figured they would try it.
Mm-hmm.
And people like myself, we had more time, so instead of hunting 10 or 15 days a year in Alabama, we may have hunted 25 or 30. So all of those factors played into it. But, yes, I do think we had an increase in our harvest due to people not being able to travel, that was my big thing. I usually go out of state a couple of times a spring. I didn't get to go.
That would make an impact.
Well, and for some people who would travel to turkey hunt, that's one thing. But I think you talk about those, the increased harvest, too. It might be the people that normally, they got the spring break, they got the family goes to Disney. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever. They got travel baseball or something like that. They like to turkey hunt, but they're, like me, they're a weekend warrior. They only get so many weekends a year. And then you got this family thing, and you got the Disney thing. And all, that didn't happen this year. So you were in the woods those mornings that you wouldn't have been before.
That's right. It was just a factor of people being around. And a lot of years, especially our public land, we really see it. You know, the first couple of weeks, every spot that there's a place for somebody to pull over on the side of the road, there's a truck there. Mm-hmm. But then after those first two or three weeks, pressure diminishes. Then you're just diehard folks are the ones that's out there. But this year, it was like opening week every day. There were people everywhere. I know a bunch of people that, you know, they may have had their couple hundred acre lease that they had. Well, they killed a couple of turkeys off of it. They were looking for someplace else to go. So there's a bunch of folks hunted public land this year that have never hunted public land before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that all, I mean, and just, you know, even if you're not talking about the, you know, the greatest turkey hunters ever, maybe you are, but just mornings in the woods are going to lead to dead gobblers. I mean, just more mornings in the woods
absolutely
will lead to dead turkeys.
Yeah.
Or afternoon sitting on the food plot.
That's right. The old bushwhack. That's right. Yeah. More hours of the day, we'll put it that way, in the woods leads to more dead turkeys. So I wonder if we, I mean, so that'll, I guess unless the replacement, unless we had a good hatch this year, and, you know, we'll see that deficit in the woods. Some people will. This coming season.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are starting our brood survey now where people can participate and let us know what they're seeing and where. I've seen some poults, but I still haven't seen an astronomical amount that thinks we're going to be out of the woods. I was with Justin Gilchrist a week or so ago down at Portland Landing in Cedar Creek, and I know you have hunted there.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Cedar Creek to look at some areas that we're actually cutting some cedar and making some openings to try to get some native grasses back out there. And we saw one group of three hens that had no poults. Then we see one hen with 11 poults.
Huh.
I mean, that's great for her, but when you start averaging it out, you're still not many poults per hen. And then we go back to Portland, and we see four hens in a group that had no poults. So there's eight hens with 11 poults. Well, I got a degree from Auburn, but I can still tell you that's less than two poults per hen if you average it out. That ain't good.
No, that is, and for people to know, that's the break point, right? It's 2 point something that is the break even or hold steady point.
Yes. So anything less than two, I mean, we're losing ground. So even though that one hen was an overachiever, you still look at it averaged out across, and those are two well-managed places with limited hunting pressure.
Y'all, Cedar Creek is the one I know, and I've told y'all from that SOA hunt I went on there, it was, I use a technical term here, it was stupid with turkeys back then.
Yeah. And still got a lot of turkeys, don't it?
Oh, yeah, it does. It does, but, you know, you just don't like seeing three hens running around with no poles.
I think a lot of people see that these days. I don't think, you know, that's a sad thing. I think across our state, obviously every site's specific, but there's a lot of people see that, see hens with no poults.
Absolutely.
And the problem is we don't know, did they just not nest, or did they nest and every time they nested, the eggs got eat up?
Or did they not get bred?
Yeah, did they not get bred? Or did they have poults and then, you know, hawks and eagles and everything else, owls and everything get the pups, you know, bobcats,
well, see,
you know?
Yeah, not too long ago, and look, I was one of them too. I'm a biologist, but I'm not a researcher. I was attributing most of that to hens just not breeding, hens getting busted up, there being too many predators and this, that, and other, but now a lot of the research is showing that maybe killing those too many of those mature gobblers too early in the season messes up the pecking order for not only the gobblers, but also the hens. And a lot of those hens just aren't breeding. So it's a whole lot more complicated than just, well, we got too many hawks and too many raccoons, or, you know, let's get a good predator control program and we can fix it.
Yeah.
That may not be as easy a fix as we once thought.
It has different parts to it. And I mean, and we'll have to do another show when we talk about that. But that research done on you shoot the dominant gobbler, I always thought you shot dominant gobbler, well, second up, he just takes over being. But it's like it shuffles the whole deck of cards. It takes them a while to
figure that out.
Before, and the hens won't just breed with any.
We're learning about here recently. And, you know, we've been, you and all three of us have been turkey hunting forever. And we always assumed, and again, I'm a biologist.
Yeah.
I assumed, hey, you kill that one guy, strutting gobbler, his buddy standing right there next to him, he's going to pick up the next day and everything's, you know, no harm, no foul. Well, according to research, that's probably not the case.
That's wild.
Yeah, it is. Wild, I mean, we all would assume that.
Hey, before we run to the break here, too, while we're talking about turkeys and we could circle around, a lot of discussion going on out there right now about clarification of the rules of fanning turkeys in the state of gobblers in the state of Alabama. What's the situation now with fanning? If people don't know, explain what fanning is and then talk about what the rules are.
You know, with YouTube and TV shows and this, that, and the other, fanning or reaping has become a big thing, and that's where you take a fan off of a harvested turkey, or even you take a decoy and you hold it in front of you and you crawl around and try to crawl up on turkey. It's always been illegal to hunt in Alabama with a mechanical decoy. And y'all, mechanical does not mean battery operated. Mechanical can mean you tying a piece of fishing line to the bottom of a decoy and pulling it. That's mechanics. That's moving.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some clarification this year in our regs after talking with the advisory board, because we have people shot every year crawling around behind a fan of a turkey. It's a safety issue.
Yeah.
So all we did, we didn't change anything. We just clarified it where people will understand you can still put your real fan on a decoy. You can put that stake out there. You can do whatever, but if you put it on the end of a gun and you move it around, that's mechanics. That's motion that's not natural, and that's what has always been illegal.
And you mentioned it. I think what did happen, I mean, a lot of TV shows you watch, and you know, they'd be out. It was, I don't know, it was Kansas or Nebraska or somewhere out in the prairies. They'd be fanning them, and, you know, you'd see that. Or other shows where they show the mechanical decoy. You know, a lot of the companies selling these mechanical decoys and showing them in action. And people back home watch that and just say, oh, well, I guess that's the way you do it now. And, you know, oh, I could buy it. But that's, you know, whether you're using a real fan or using a mechanical decoy, those, you can't do that in Alabama.
That's right. That's right.
Well, there's quite a few people.
You can still use decoys. You can still put a real fan on it. Just don't be crawling around out there with it or putting it on the end of your gun barrel and stalking around. This isn't us overreacting. This is years of data of people getting shot.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we'll run to the break and coming right back. More with Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama. So there you go. I mean, that was, you know, the fanning thing. Sure looks like it's exciting on those TV shows.
I know a lot of people that don't know that law.
Yeah, maybe they'll learn it now.
Yes, there's a lot of people I know don't know that law.
But I mean, would you think about safety wise, would you grab the rack from a 150-inch deer and kind of walk around the woods with that, kind of swinging it back and forth?
Well, it depends on where you hunt.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd do that anywhere. All right, coming right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. And Chuck, we're talking about the clarification on no fanning, or what was the other term you used for it? Reaping? Is it?
Reaping.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Same thing. Yeah. So just different word. And no mechanical decoys, no motion decoys out there.
Well, I can tell you a lot of people don't know that that is a law in Alabama. I can tell you that right now because I do know people that carry fans with them, and they're sitting in a stand, and a turkey coming, and they won't come on in, and they'll take that fan and stick it in the air and turn it and trying to get that turkey to see it and come to them. And I can tell you a lot of people don't realize that that is illegal in Alabama. So it's good that we're having this conversation and letting everybody know that it is illegal.
And another thing you were talking about during the break there was Chuck talking about the distances that people might shoot a turkey these days.
Yeah, you know, back 20 or 30 years ago, if you had that fan in your back, you know, on the back of your vest and a turkey was out there at 75 or 80 yards and you wanted to do that, and you were shooting old Remington 1100, and you were having to get a turkey within 20 or 30 yards to kill him, that's a whole different scenario than the way it is today, where I'm shooting a 410 with TSS that'll kill a turkey at 40, and I know a bunch of people that are shooting Benelli 3.5-inch Super Black Eagles with TSS, and not saying it's right or wrong, but they're shooting turkeys at 70 and 80 yards.
Yes.
That's a whole different ball game if you got somebody on their hands and knees crawling around behind a real turkey fan and you've got an unexperienced hunter. That's a recipe for a potential disaster.
Not only that, that TSS will penetrate where lead won't penetrate. Where you shoot somebody with TSS, it's going to go in their body. Big time.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it'll penetrate through 3/4-inch plywood. I mean, it is some tough stuff.
And the key to this, though, is clarifying the law that there's no fanning allowed in Alabama, no mechanical decoys. And I want to also talk about clarifications that have come out here with gator season getting ready to crank up here in the month of August. I saw this on the OutdoorAlabama.com website, headline here about culling, not culling gators. What do y'all consider? What is culling the gator? I mean, is it?
Look, it's the same thing. Nothing changed, so all the people that's going to jump up and down and say, well, you're changing the regs, no, we didn't. Nothing has changed. We are just making clarifications to try to keep people from getting in trouble. It's always been where you couldn't – an alligator hunt is not like a bass fishing tournament that's catch and release. And you go out there and you catch as many as you can, and you get one to the boat and say, nah, that's not quite big enough, I'm going to turn him loose. This is a cold-blooded critter that's expending a lot of energy, and there's a lot of unintended mortalities that can take place under those conditions. So it was never designed to be that way, but in the past couple of years, there, in our opinion, have been some people that have taken advantage of our leniency with enforcing that.
Yeah.
So we just made sure that we put a clarification out there. Culling is illegal. It will be handled as such this year. So make sure that when you go after a gator and you get a line on it, that's the gator that you want to harvest.
There it is.
And that's why we make people go through. In the past, it was you had to go to a physical training course. We've got it now where it's an online training course, but it still teaches you techniques where you're not hooking a 4-foot gator thinking that he's a 10-foot. The only exception is on Lake Eufaula, and a gator's got to be 8 feet before it's legal to harvest. So can understand if you get one that's 6 feet, you thought it was 8 feet, that's a little understandable, but there's been a lot of videos posted and people talking, and you're watching catching 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 foot gators, a half a dozen of them during a night, and turning them back loose. That's not what this program was intended. There's a lot of people that put in for a limited number of tags, and we don't want people abusing the system.
Yeah, and I think what you said is, and people were either willfully ignorant or just ignorant of the rule, because I've seen the videos shared on social media and on YouTube where they're kind of going through and, you know, counting check here on how many. Look at that. That's our fourth we caught tonight. Turn them loose. Let's go get another one.
Yep.
You know.
But are they doing that just to have fun catching gators, or are they catching gators during the season and letting them go.
Well, this is, but he's talking about during the season. If you put a hook or an arrow in one, that's your gator.
Yeah, I understand that. But is there people out there like today, tonight, going out gator fishing and catching them?
You can't do that, can you?
No.
So, I mean,
it might be, though.
These I think have been during season, but I've seen these videos where people were talking about how many they caught. And I don't know, maybe people were just, just really ignorant and didn't know they couldn't do that. But yeah.
And that's why we didn't get heavy-handed last year. We said before things come out next year, we just got to make a clarification and make sure people understand it.
That's why we have you on the show and we talk about
that's
it.
That's right. It's for sure.
All we don't want people having tickets.
So
right.
Yeah, that's a better thing. Y'all would rather not write the ticket.
No, we don't make money off of writing tickets. We want people to have fun, and we're looking out for the resource. This is a resource issue. If you catch 10 alligators and turn 9 of them loose and 5 of those 9 die, then it may be within a couple of years of doing that, we may have to reduce our tag numbers on an already limited resource, and you're preventing other people from enjoying the hunt. So it goes back, y'all, to the same thing we talk about on 90% of the issues we have, is selfishness and greed and only worrying about myself.
Stupidity's in there too, Chuck.
hey, with that, y'all.
And it's still not illegal to be stupid.
Yeah.
We have to get a lot of tickets. As always, we appreciate your time, and we've got lots more to talk about on a future show coming up. Get you back on before dove season. How about that?
10-4, sounds good. Good luck with the brown top.
I'm going to have a cannon shooting out human excrement is what I'm going to get. That's
you
what I'm going to
have me
double
and
up,
all your buddies out there.
Double up on them there.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend as well. Prep Sports Report on the way next. We'll see you next week.
All right.